This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right. Happy Wednesday night, everybody. I hope your week is going well. We got a great show planned for you. We're going to be doing a little celebrity rehab later, and question of the night is same as last night. We got such a great response. We kept it up. It's about getting cheated on or cheating, and what was your reasoning for it? So much to learn from that unfortunate trauma and poor decision making. And also talking tonight with Dr. Adi Jaffe about the opioid epidemic. But let's jump into some news. Love this one. Swali, who I became familiar with because he did a song with Madonna, and I think we played here on the station. Yeah. He is designing a men's shoe line. It's gender neutral. Why? Well, because that is what we're all doing. But this man's also into that kind of stuff, so I'm here for it. And what he's basically designing, ready for this one? I love this deeply. His line will include men's heels, canvas boots, suede loafers, and sneakers. He says, and I'm going to have to edit a little bit of this out, but here's his quote. A lot of rappers are effing scared to wear stuff. That's my word, stuff. They want to think the old ways and put a limit on that stuff. I'm not scared to be different. I was making something to go on someone's body to complete their outfit. The shoe completes a look. It was up to me to make the outfit, so it was way different. Now I'm helping people with their well-being, their image. That's important. And he basically says, I wear what I want. It doesn't matter if it's a women's blouse. He says, if it looks good, I'm a rocket. I mean, I love that. It's fabric. It's material. They're not gendered. We chose to do that. And I love that we're busting outside of that. We're like, just wear what you like. Wear what looks good. So yeah, his line of men's heels will be dropping soon. I'm all about that. Sticking with some of the rap game, Young Thug, man, this breaks my heart. He came out and misgenders deliberately Dwayne Wade's trans daughter, who we were talking about, who came out as trans. Man, this is unfortunate. Because first off, it's like, Young Thug, mind your business. Like, no, you don't need to be weighing in on other people's life's decisions. I mean, I was railing against Wendy Williams last night. Like, girl, have your show. But if it's rooted in mocking people and emotional abuse and violence, like, you got to work on what you want your legacy to be. This one's doing the same thing. Young Thug says, all I want to say to Dwayne's son is God don't make mistakes, but hey, live your true self. Come on. You know, like, that's so heinously violent. And remember, Dwayne's daughter is 12. You are essentially bullying a 12-year-old. Young Thug has since removed the tweet, but y'all, we got the receipts because people screenshot that stuff. That's the thing. These things live on forever. So be really thoughtful what you put out there. And again, it is mind-boggling that people with any platform, larger ones especially, would want to fill it with hate speech. This is a 12-year-old trying to live their life. Like, get off it. What is your beef? You know what I mean? God don't make mistakes. You don't speak for God. You don't know what God wants. You don't know what he's thinking. This might be the chosen path that he created for this girl. Like, I love the arrogance that people think they know what God wants or his message, y'all. Take a seat. All right. In other news, love this one. Polyamory. Look, this is amazing. This is amazing. So ABC has a comedy called Single Parents. I don't have television. I don't watch that crap, but there it is. And they're normalizing throuples. I'm here for that. In their latest episode, it's become a main storyline. And this is great because television is usually just cisgendered characters, heteronormative relationships. Welp, they are including in their episode, which is what's, wow, it's dropping right now. It's called Welcome to Hilltop. And it features the character Poppy and their friend Angie. And they become concerned for their pal Miggy, I love these names, whose girlfriend Homily is seen cozying up to another man. So of course they freak out and they're like, oh, you know, you're a dude to someone else. And basically it comes out that they're in a throuple. and they meet on a poly app called Big Bed. Now, I love this because it normalizes diverse choices and ways of being. It's, you know, it's all about designer relationships. People are finally realizing, hey, I get to choose what I want and what works for me, and I don't have to fall in line with what my parents did. Okay, not to be outdone, HGTV is featuring their first ever throuple on their show House Hunters. I love this show. I used to binge watch this. I still do sometimes on Netflix and Hulu, but they got a throuple on there. I love this. And the title of that segment or episode is called Threes, Not a Crowd in Colorado Springs. And it features Brian, Lori, and Jelly. And they're moving to Colorado together. And Brian says, Lori and I got married in 2002. We have two kids. I understood from day one, even when we were dating, that Lori was bi. And so we thought, hey, we'll evolve and bring a woman into our lives. Jelly, the third, says, I didn't plan on being in a relationship with a married couple. It just happened, and we're happy. Three partners are not married. They made a commitment in a ceremony, though, in Aruba. I love that. I can't wait to get to a place where you can marry as many people as you want. Wherever we got this magic number of two is a little outdated, but we'll work on that. We'll work on that. Baby steps. All right, coming up next, we're going to be talking about sexual fantasies. Listen to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. Question of the night. As always, it's up on our Loveline IG page. And if you go to wearechannelq.com, you can get all of our shows podcasted. Every single one of them, you can post them, share them, binge them. But first, I want to tell you about Miami Pride Flyaway. Listen, if you want to go to sunny South Beach for the amazing, iconic Miami Beach Pride, biggest weekend. The festival is on April 3rd, 4th, and 5th. WeAreChannelQ.com. Guess what? You go there, you get your chance to win because we will fly you and a friend to Miami Beach, set you both up in a gorgeous hotel, and provide you with two VIP weekend passes. That's right. You will get an open bar in the VIP lounge, champagne, and brunch before the parade. Come on, y'all. I can't go wrong with that. Enter the contest, WeAreChannelQ.com, to go to Miami Beach Pride. And note, all are welcome to the free Oceanside Celebration, which is presented by Celebrity Cruisers. Okay, sexual fantasies. Let's talk about it. Look, we all got them. We all got them. And some people struggle with them. So the entry point that I want to just remind people is, number one, when we fantasize about something, that is not a message that it's something we want to do or try. In fact, it's often the opposite. If fantasy exists for the purpose of allowing our minds to wander and explore things that maybe we want to try, or maybe we want to experience first in our minds, or things that we would never want to do in real life, and that is a safe place for it. And that's why I love supporting people in letting their mind wander wherever they want, because again, it's a safe, contained space because no one's harmed or impacted. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. So allow your mind to wander. Allow it to be an added element and thread to your sex life to amp it up, whether you're having sex with yourself or someone else. And maybe you can learn about yourself that way. It's sometimes the purest expression of your true sexual, your sexuality, your sexual orientation, which again is bigger than gender choice. It's everything you're turned on by. And our fantasy is a place to really go, oh my gosh, that's a more honest expression maybe of some of the things that turn me on. Is there a way to fold some of these elements into my daily sex life? Maybe not. Now, the bigger part to remember is the common sexual fantasies are not my wife, who I'm married to, in our bedroom, on Sunday, in the morning, after we showered, making eye contact, making love. That's not what we have our minds wandering about in terms of sexual fantasy. It tends to be skewed towards novelty and taboo. Why? Well, because new novel things are always going to be the most arousing, not the things that we commonly encounter. That's why our sexual fantasies are very much rooted in current cultural moments and experiences. Things that are really normalized in our culture are not going to be the things that we sexually fantasize about. We will sexually fantasize about things that live outside of that. That's just how that works. The more you resist it, the more it persists. And it's the more taboo, marginal things that are always going to be really arousing to us. Those shiny objects that we don't necessarily always have access to or always see. That's what makes it fun. That's what makes it exotic. So remember, it's not going to be the traditional stuff generally. And your work around the fantasies is to just allow and accept them. Make peace with them, right? Because that's a safe place. And it doesn't necessarily speak to something you're going to do, but it does tell you a little bit about who you are. Now, looking at the studies, a lot of these fantasies are centered around multi-partnered. And people come to my office saying, I have fantasies. It turns me on to think of my wife with someone else, whatever. Yeah, that's normal. All these colorful things are normal, but don't panic. And if you're in a really healthy relationship, you can express these and share them with your partner as just part of sex play. Sometimes just sharing the fantasy is enough. We don't actually have to do it or try it. And only share with safe partners that will say, thank you for wanting to be known. Thank you for bringing that to me. Yeah, I'd love to hear more about it. I'd love to talk about that, why we have sex. Or I'd love to maybe even try that. I'd love to gift you that. I love you. I understand that you're limited by my limits and I want to expand that. And that's a really beautiful exercise, is to see how you can help expand yourself. So sexual fantasies, they're a beautiful thing and they're there for a purpose. Coming up next, we're going to be doing some addiction talk with Dr. D. Jaffe and then some DMs. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back and now it's time for our addiction segment. So of course we got Dr. D. Jaffe joining us. How's it going?
Really, really good, man. How are you?
I'm well. I'm well. How are you feeling? You feeling any better from last week?
I'm done. It's
oh,
over.
Good. So, fascinating thing that you posted, and it was about the impact of the opioid crisis and how a large percentage of the prescriptions are coming from dental work.
Yeah.
And I thought that that was really, really, really profound, because I know that we're just starting now to, well, we've been taking it seriously, but we're starting to take it more seriously. And I'm actually going to be working with LA's Department of Health on a project around all this. But talk to us a little bit about that piece, the whole dental work component, because I think a lot of people, you know, they go get healthcare and they trust whatever doctors tell them they need, and they don't always feel empowered to process other options. So walk us through that a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's... So here's the thing, right? When the opioid crisis started, we were talking about pain management or pain medication. And I think that's where everybody at least knew that opioids were being heavily prescribed. And I think that makes sense. Most of us know something hurts, you get an opiate pill. You know, we forget this now because we've been in this for 10 years,
that's
really.
Right.
But 10 years ago, if you went to your doctor and said, hey, my hip really hurts, they just give you some oxy. It's we've left that world behind a little bit, but, you know, that's really the way that it used to be. And then there were these huge cycles, and you hear these insane stories, right, of small towns in the middle of nowhere that had, like, 4 million prescriptions a month for OxyContin for them and all that kind of stuff.
And there's a really powerful documentary right now. I don't know if it's – I think it's HBO, called The Pharmacist. And – it's essentially rooted in this. There's a pharmacist who started to notice in his local town that he was getting thousands upon thousands of prescriptions for opioids, and they were at levels that would kill these smaller bodied framed individuals that were coming in, sometimes teenagers. And he started to track them and saw they were coming from the same doctor. And then he went to the doctor's clinic and sat outside and just saw a line of hundreds of people waiting to get in for prescriptions. It was a prescription mill. I digress.
Again, some of us are so far removed from this now that we forget that this existed.
Right.
But, you know, I went on Dr. Oz talking about a doctor in California who was the first doctor to get indicted criminally for this. You know, doctors just ran these clinics. They knew that as long as people were on these for a few days, they would, and by a few days, I mean, you know, a week or two, they would get massively, massively physiologically dependent.
Right.
And a lot of them, here's the scary thing, a lot of people wouldn't recognize it until they're months, sometimes a few years in. And then it's a beast to kick. And so people weren't looking outside of pain management for a long time. And because we did a good job, by the way, the CDC just recently reported that we've had the first drop in a decade in overall overdose deaths.
Beautiful.
Which is pretty amazing. But because we had been fighting this thing for so long, I think most people were kind of saying to themselves, well, you know, as long as pain management is handled in orthopedic care and things like that, which is, you know, broken legs, sore back, that kind of stuff, then everything will be fine. But yeah, there's like this lurking, not epidemic, but this lurking prescription source, which was dental surgery. And what researchers found is that even though, look, you know, you get your teeth extracted, it's freaking painful. So you need pain medication. But oftentimes, you know, 1 or 2 days are enough.
That's right.
But doctors, and I think you can speak more to this, actually, to be honest, than I can. I think doctors initially just really wanted to take care of their clients. And so, you know, I don't want my client to be in pain. So I give them more than they need, because then they're going to like me more. The problem is 5, 6, 7 days, 2 weeks, a month, 2 months later, and you've got somebody who's got a real opiate problem.
And then push us into this conversation about the use of medical marijuana as a way to deal with coming off of opioids, because I think that that's really fascinating. That was also something that I saw you talking about.
Yeah, I love it. Look, everybody who knows me and follows me for a while knows I'm a follower of all things. People call it harm reduction.
Right.
But I call it just whatever the kitchen sink of solutions that is available out there. Especially in states where cannabis is legal, we know that cannabis and THC can be used as pain relief, as analgesics, right? As chemicals that will help reduce pain. That's not new. It's just that up to now, they've been illegal. And so there are definitely people who are testing the idea of transitioning from opiates to something that is at least physiologically less devastating to stop. And I would be remiss if I didn't even at least mention this. It's hotly debated in some circles, but kratom is another herbal sort of remedy that some opioid dependent individuals are using. And the idea is just simple. Look, have you ever taken a lot of opiates? I haven't.
I haven't. I'm actually one of those blessed few who's never had surgery or any major medical issues.
So I'm one of those people who, I broke my leg in a motorcycle accident. That's how the arrest happened 20 years ago and all that stuff. But I got put on heavy duty Vicodin and some Percocets back then. I really didn't like opiates, but I can tell you something. And that was, I realized within, 5 to 7 days of taking it, that if I was taking them as prescribed, which was, like every 4 to 6 hours, I had a really hard time getting off of them. So because I didn't actually like the effect, what I did was, I would almost like not take the opiate until I was in so much pain I had to take it, just to have that space in there.
But that's because you had the knowledge. You had the awareness of what could happen, and you're trying to kind of combat that. But
I don't even know that I had the knowledge back then. I hated the feeling of it. This is the beginning of my journey. I just really didn't like the feeling. But the reason I'm saying it is it speaks to... there's a mistake, a misnomer of something that happens in our society. And people think that, if you're addicted to opiates, you're only taking them because you really like them. Right? You only take them because you really like the effect. That's not true. Some people take them because they like, it's called positive reinforcement. They like the effect that they give them. But there's this really big other thing, and it's called negative reinforcement. And negative reinforcement in neuroscience is the idea that you will do things to stop yourself from experiencing pain and discomfort. So a lot of people who are quote unquote addicted to opiates right now are doing the opiates because if they don't do the opiates, they feel terrible. And so they'll keep doing it.
Beautiful. Let's finish that out next week. We'll jump back more into this. Dr. DeJaffe, where can people find you?
Easiest place to do it is thedjaffe.com. If you want to check out my book, go to theabstinencemyth.com.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. Have an awesome night.
Thank you, buddy. You too.
Coming up next, we're going to be sliding into those DMs, and then later we'll be doing a little celebrity rehab. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back, and now it's time to slide into those DMs.
Sliding into the DMs.
Sliding in the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sex world and we want you to explore with confidence. Our DMs come from our Loveline IG page, so if you want your DM read or answered on air, slide into the DMs on our Loveline IG page. And also, you can give us a call, 833-LOVE-001, 833-LOVE-001. Here we go. This came into my Dr. Donahue DMs, actually. Someone sent me a meme and then wanted to know my thoughts, and I thought it was actually a really good one. So here we go. The meme said, when we use the word foreplay, we unwittingly reinforce gender inequality. This word reinforces the predominant sexual script, a script that elevates one act above all others and minimizes the stuff that tend to be most orgasm-producing for those with a vulva. And the person said, hey, Dr. Chris, I was wondering what your thoughts on this were. I think that meme kind of nails it. You know, first off, I agree that using the word foreplay definitely creates a binary where things are actually foreplay, which is supposed to be seen as an entry point, an opener, something lesser than, and then we often see penetration as sex, true sex, real sex, adult sex, really, really finishing or getting to it. And that's problematic because I utilize in my practice an umbrella of sexuality. And I say, you know, again, when we're with our partners and we're being erotic or sexual, it's better or it's best when we focus on just pleasure. And that's going to mean that maybe penetration's involved, or maybe penetration's involved at the beginning or the middle or for some point, but it doesn't have to be the goal or the end point. Not everyone enjoys penetration. And, you know, things that are considered quote unquote foreplay have just as much meaning and value when we talk about what sex is for. Sex is for connecting. It's for bonding. It's for intimacy. It's for fun. It's for pleasure. It's for conflict resolution. It's for self-soothing. But none of these things mandate or require penetration. And so I agree. I don't like the separation of, oh, that's just foreplay, because that's the caveat that usually comes with it. It's just, and it's all sexuality. And for people who don't enjoy penetration, they sometimes feel lesser than or broken. And so again, remember, the goal of sex is all these things that fall under that umbrella. And what's really interesting is some people will say, you know, I don't think oral is sex. And I'll say to them, okay, are you in a monogamous relationship? And they'll say yes. And I'll say, well, then your partner can have oral with whoever they want, because that's not sex. And then they go, oh, well, wait a minute. It's like, right, that actually is sex. And that's why that falls under your monogamous commitment. So let's use that broad definition. Because again, remember, based on phases of life, mood and mental health and medication and disabilities and aging and all these different factors, we're not always going to be able to have the same sex life throughout our lives. And penetration might not always be something that we're interested in or available to. So that's the first part. We need to get rid of the word foreplay and just say sex. Or use the word that I prefer, sexuality. We're having sexuality. We engaged in sex together, and that means a multitude of things. And I also agree that for people that are vulva owners, the stats show only about a third actually orgasm from penetration alone, and that the bulk of vulva owners actually need clitoral stimulation, which doesn't traditionally occur in penetration. And so we have to, again, get away from this penis owner centric idea of what sex is, because again, we're in a patriarchal culture, which, you know, is rooted in the pleasure of male bodied and presenting individuals. And we want to expand outside of that. So awesome question. Sliding into the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sexy world and we want you to explore with confidence. Coming up next, we got our buddy Jarrett Hill joining us to talk about our question of the night, and then we'll be doing a little celebrity rehab. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back, and now it's time for a little chit chat with Mr. Jarrett Hill.
Yeah. I'm smarter than you.
No, what I say is right. No. What I think is right.
Yeah, you know what? I know everything we're talking about.
Coffee talk.
What's going on, Jarrett?
That's me. You know, I love you, you people that pronounce that A so long. Jarrett. I love it.
Because I like that name. I want to just sit with it as long as I can. What do you got coming up, though? You got. For Channel Q.
Yes, we've got debate night and late night coming up. I'm very excited. Tonight's debate is the spiciest one yet. Elizabeth Warren came right out the gate just with, you know, she came out swinging, and yeah. I was loving every moment of
That's
it.
That's our so. EW.
Yeah.
So our question of the night, last night, we brought it back in tonight again because we got such a good response.
Okay.
And it's actually kind of personal and vulnerable, so I'll be curious to see how you respond to this one. It's
You love to throw these things at me with no warning.
That's how we get the best answers.
Yes,
you don't have time to really prepackage something. So the question was, if you've ever cheated on someone or been cheated on, what was the reason? And it was really interesting to listen to people vulnerably reach out and share that they were the cheater, and this is what their reasoning was. Not that they weren't defending, they were just clarifying, explaining. And it was really fascinating to see what the reasoning was that people found drove them to this. So let me start with the first part. Have you ever cheated on anyone?
I've not ever cheated, no.
Okay.
I haven't.
And why do you think that is?
Because
you're in the minority by saying that, because the majority of people actually have.
The majority of people have?
Right now, it depends where you look at the stats, but the stats are somewhere between, of all the relationships that are currently in play right now, anywhere from 50 to 70 have a partner that's cheating or has cheated.
Wow.
So the norm is to cheat. That's the statistical norm. So you're actually in the minority by having not. So that's why my profound question is, why haven't you?
I'm gagged by that.
Yeah, not that you should, but statistically you should.
I think...
What's wrong with you?
I know, right? Exactly. Why are you the weirdo, queer? I guess for me, I've always just thought about like how I would feel if it were me.
Okay.
If I were on the other side of it. I get it though. Like cheating is one of those things where I've always said, like, it's not an immediate deal breaker. It depends on the circumstances and what happened.
Yes, and I valued you
and how
that,
I find out
it's
about
very
it.
Mature.
Yeah.
Because I think it should be a question. What made you choose to do that? What do we need to talk about? What do we need to work on?
Yeah.
And then make your decision from there.
Yeah. I just think sometimes people cheat because they are not getting what they need.
Right.
Oftentimes I think they cheat because they're not getting what they need. But I think also sometimes people cheat because they're just jackasses, right?
They cheat because they're a jerk. They cheat because they're not getting what they need. They cheat because they're afraid to leave or speak up for what they need. But I'll tell you, it's the random small percentage where it was literally just accidental or spontaneous.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually a symptom of something larger. It's rare that it was literally wrong place, wrong time, wrong person,
yeah,
too much to drink or whatever it was. It's usually bigger than that.
I think for me, I haven't cheated because I'm always thinking about karma. And I'm always thinking about what my story is going to be in the end, which I do to a fault, I think.
Okay.
But I'm always just worried about like how the narrative about me is going to be shaped based on
your
what
legacy.
I'm doing. Yeah. And I think about that too much. And lately I've been thinking like, if I'm 75 years old, I'm going to be like, you took yourself way too seriously.
Beautifully said. I mean, I wish some people would care more about their impact with their time here and that would look at their legacy and be like, do I really want to look back on my life and realize that I was part of a problematic system and driving all that? But I appreciate you being on the other end of the continuum where you think you need to loosen up and let go. But what would that mean?
I don't know. That's what I've been trying to ask myself a lot. I would probably say in the last year, I've spent a lot of brain power on like, what am I taking too seriously? I remember, I'm so obnoxious. Okay, so in 10th grade, I remember thinking, 10th or 11th grade, I remember thinking that all of the people in my class were going to be able to vote for the next president of the United States and how crazy that was to me. And then I started thinking about how my brain has worked my whole life. You should have seen the things
I was thinking in 10th grade.
Then I thought to myself, if I ever wanted to be president, what are the things that are going to come up in my campaign?
Wow, you were that guy.
In 10th or 11th grade, I was thinking that. And so I've always tried to live a relatively clean life. Mind you, I've missed the mark many a time.
Good.
But I'm a person who's never sending out D-pics. Like, there are very few people who have any kind of like media of me doing anything that compromising because I've always been in media and as a journalist and stuff like that. And so I've always known like there was an added layer of like, you shouldn't do that because it'll come back to haunt you. But now I'm starting to think I'm taking myself so seriously that, am I missing out on things that like, maybe I should have been cheating.
But that's an interesting conversation. I don't think you should have been cheating, but I would at some point like to sit down. And this could actually, producer Emmy, be a good question of the night. Like looking back at your life or looking at your life, what are the elements around which you should like let go, be a little more wild or less uptight? I'd be curious to sit with that. Have you ever been cheated on?
As far as you know, right, exactly. I was going to say, I believe I've been cheated on once.
Okay.
I would say like the breakup that I had that hurt me the most was because A, I didn't see it coming.
Yeah.
It just like, I was completely blindsided by it. And then when we broke up, I didn't hear from my ex, I think for like 6 or 9 months. It was like complete radio silence. Like didn't respond to anything or whatever. And then I found on social media this photo of him with another guy. And it was from the day we broke up.
Okay.
And it was interesting to me because I was like, you just met this person and you're on his social media. I'm not buying that. And then I found out that he had met him the day before we broke up.
Right.
We broke up and they got together that night. And I was like, no, something happened before we broke up.
That's a little too quick and comfortable.
Yeah. And now they just got married 3 months ago. So that's delicious.
Wow. That's a story.
Yeah.
Man, I want to do more with that. We'll come deeper onto that at some point. You know, it's interesting. So for me, I've been cheated on and I've cheated. And I'm at a place now where I truly mean this word. I have a lot more maturity than I did then.
Yeah.
This is years and years and years ago. I've also been more honest with my needs in relationships where, you know, one of the relationships that would have led me to cheat in the past or would lead some others, we decided it was important to be in an open relationship. So we were. So everyone was getting what they needed. I've been in relationships where I set the needed parameters and structures. And so I think that's part of it is don't back into a relationship from the door that doesn't feel structurally what you're looking for. Because I think too many people follow the flow of what it's supposed to look like and not really sitting and going, but for me, what do I need? And that's why I like that we're in this period now of designer relationships where people are actually realizing there's a multitude of ways we can structure our relationship, and I get to choose what's right for me, and I get to even change my mind years in.
Yeah.
And I think that that might hopefully prevent people from doing the really damaging act of cheating.
I love that. Yeah. And I would say, number one, I don't believe in the idea of like once a cheater, always a cheater, because I think
because it's not
people
true.
Evolve, right?
That's right.
And if you're not evolving, that's really the issue.
Correct.
And two, I don't worry about cheating in relationships for me, because I am a person that I place much more value on us having the relationship that works for us than us having the relationship that we've been told to have.
Bam.
So
well done, sir. Where can people find you?
You can find me everywhere at Jarrett Hill. You can check out my new podcast called Fanti, wherever you get your podcasts. It's F-A-N-T-I. It's we've been doing really well. We have a brand new episode out tomorrow morning.
Stoked.
And catch me right here on Channel Q for Debate Night and Late Night with Jarrett Hill, starting right after Loveline.
I love it. Coming up next, we're doing a little celebrity rehab and then question of the night. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris.
On Channel Q.
All right, we're back, and now it's time for a little celebrity rehab.
Celebrity rehab with Dr. Chris.
So, of course, we've got Loveline's pop culture guru, Nick Mora, with us. What's going on, Nick?
Oh, hey, how you doing?
Good. How is your health? Everyone's getting sick.
Well, my mental health is not so great, but my regular health's okay for the first time ever. You know what I mean?
Yes, I'm all about that one.
But there is like so much going on. It's been a pretty slow week, but the most interesting thing I found today was that Steven Spielberg's daughter, his adopted daughter, came out and said that she is actually a porn star, believe it or not. Did you know this, Dr. Chris?
I you know, it's funny. I literally just about 7 seconds ago stumbled upon that article, and I flagged it to read, but I haven't read it yet.
Okay, well, the universe loves us because I can just read your mind.
Well, we're like twins, you and I. Twins, I say. So,
I know, just telepathic twins. So... Remember, he has two adopted children, and then he has children from his actual wife. So this is the daughter, the 23-year-old daughter that he adopted.
Okay.
And she has a fiance. So now she's saying that while she may have done porn and she's still doing porn, she only does solo videos.
Okay. Okay. And how's the family handling that?
She says her dad is really supportive and has accepted it, and they're the best people ever. So I thought this was a really good topic of conversation for today in today's day and age about sex and sexuality. I know that's your forte, so that's my question for you today.
So this is powerful for me. You know, a lot of people have a lot of thoughts about this, and it's interesting because for some people, if it's someone else, they have one opinion, and if it's their child or they imagine it being their child, they have a second opinion. So I first just want to say I really applaud her parents for being supportive of her, because I think that that's the role of a parent, is to hold your child's hand through the pros and cons of any choice. I mean, whether your child wants to become a doctor, a lawyer, a teacher, an actress, a singer, an artist, or even a porn performer, these are just different forms of employment and labor, and all of them are body labor, right? Like, that's the first thing I always want to point out. Whether you're a barista, or you're working at a convenience store, or you're a teacher, or you're any other role, our jobs are always very objectifying. It's the rare job where people are actually subjectified or humanized. We objectify people all day long. It's rare that someone goes to a restaurant and says to their server, tell me your name and how's your day, and I really want to humanize you, and so I want you to let me know your experience of you know, serving me. And we don't do that. We objectify them, and it's just our waitress. We don't even ask their name. And so we move through the world pretty objectifyingly all the time. Also, there's a lot of careers that we overly validate and support, like, let's say, football. Well, football is quite dangerous and leads to a lot of brain disorders and concussions, but yet we somehow aren't afraid of that, even though it has direct negative ramifications on people's health. I even think about things like cheerleading, where girls are falling and getting paralyzed, and we're somehow okay with that. But again, sex tends to always be that special case, where any other use of your body for employment makes sense to us, even, again, dangerous jobs. jobs, being on a fishing boat out in sea, things like that. But sex is always a special case. I fully support people subjectifying themselves by deciding how they'll use their body for employment or money making. So I think it is something that people should be able to consider. It's not for everyone, but I definitely applaud her family for supporting her. All right. Coming up next, question of the night. And then we'll be sliding into those DMs. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. And now it's time for a little celebrity rehab.
Celebrity rehab with Dr. Chris.
So, of course, we've got Loveline's pop culture guru, Nick Mora, with us. What's going on, Nick?
Oh, hey, how you doing?
Good. How is your health? Everyone's getting sick.
Well, my mental health is not so great, but my regular health's okay for the first time ever. You know what I mean?
Yes, I'm all about that one.
But there is like so much going on. It's been a pretty slow week, but the most interesting thing I found today was that Steven Spielberg's daughter, his adopted daughter, came out and said that she is actually a porn star, believe it or not. Did you know this, Dr. Chris?
I you know, it's funny. I literally just about 7 seconds ago stumbled upon that article and I flagged it to read, but I haven't read it yet.
Okay, well, the universe loves us because I can just read your mind.
Well, we're like twins, you and I. Twins, I say. So,
I know, just telepathic twins. So, remember, he has two adopted children, okay, and then he has children from his actual wife. So this is the daughter, the 23-year-old daughter that he adopted.
Okay.
And she has a fiance. So now she's saying that while she may have done porn and she's still doing porn, she only does solo videos.
Okay, okay. And how's the family handling that?
She says her dad is really supportive and has accepted it, and they're the best people ever. So I thought this was a really good topic of conversation for today in today's day and age about sex and sexuality. I know that's your forte, so that's my question for you today.
So this is powerful for me. You know, a lot of people have a lot of thoughts about this, and it's interesting because for some people, if it's someone else, they have one opinion, and if it's their child or they imagine it being their child, they have a second opinion. So I first just want to say I really applaud her parents for being supportive of her, because I think that that's the role of a parent, is to hold your child's hand through the pros and cons of any choice. I mean, whether your child wants to become a doctor, a lawyer, a teacher, an actress, a singer, an artist, or even a porn performer, these are just different forms of employment and labor, and all of them are body labor, right? Like, that's the first thing I always want to point out. Whether you're a barista, or you're working at a convenience store, or you're a teacher, or you're any other role, our jobs are always very objectifying. It's the rare job where people are actually subjectified or humanized. We objectify people all day long. It's rare that someone goes to a restaurant and says to their server, tell me your name and how's your day, and I really want to humanize you, and so I want you to let me know your experience of you know, serving me. And we don't do that. We objectify them, and it's just our waitress. We don't even ask their name. And so we move through the world pretty objectifyingly all the time. Also, there's a lot of careers that we overly validate and support, like, let's say, football. Well, football is quite dangerous and leads to a lot of brain disorders and concussions, but yet we somehow aren't afraid of that, even though it has direct negative ramifications on people's health. I even think about things like cheerleading, where girls are falling and getting paralyzed, and we're somehow okay with that. But again, sex tends to always be that special case where any other use of your body for employment makes sense to us. Even, again, dangerous jobs, being on a fishing boat out in sea, things like that. But sex is always a special case. I fully support people subjectifying themselves by deciding how they'll use their body for employment or money making. So I think it is something that people should be able to consider. It's not for everyone, but I definitely applaud her family for supporting her. All right. Coming up next, question of the night. And then we'll be sliding into those DMs. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back, and now it's time for DMs.
Sliding into the DMs.
Sliding into the DM is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sex of world. We want you to explore with confidence. Here we go. Hey, Dr. D, my friend is really insecure about her body. She often says that she was bad when she eats less healthy food. She told me recently that she's too insecure to wear a bathing suit, and that the last time she wore one, she was so anxious about her body, she cried. When I reassure her that she looks great and should totally just wear the bathing suit, she says thanks, but I can tell the compliment doesn't really penetrate. What do you think would be a good response for me to have when she says she's bad or not fit enough to wear a bathing suit? I would stop complimenting her because, that is a very basic attempt at a solution, which doesn't usually have long-term effects. You know, her body might be one that doesn't align with the standards and norms that our culture has set forth, and she might be aware of that. We're working tirelessly on changing this one version of what an acceptable body is, but until we get there, it's really hard to convince some people that are not the quote-unquote standard expected body that they have value and beauty. We're working really hard on that, but a compliment's not going to change that. And I'd also say it's not your job to take on her insecurity. It's her job. Lovingly stand there and listen, but number one, don't get pulled into that game. So even if someone says, how do I look? I always tell people to say, how do you feel? Or how do you think you look? Well, then go with that. That's really great. Don't get pulled into being someone's validation. So I personally will not answer those questions. And I stay outside of that. This is her own private journey. Be a friend and supporter. Tell her to go to therapy. Tell her to surround herself with body positive media and things like that. So when she says she's bad or, you know, about the bathing suit, I would stay out of it. I really, really would. And I would maybe even consider setting the boundary of I don't participate in diet or body shaming. And so I'm not willing to have these conversations with you, and keep shutting it down and shutting it down and shutting it down. Because what you're doing is you're protecting yourself from internalizing that, but you're also indirectly, in a really beautiful way, pulling her out of her ruminating on her body, because she's trapped in that cycle where she's looking at herself, analyzing herself. And by you saying, I'm not willing to have that conversation, I do that for me, I do that for you, it's really redirecting your attention. And it's really powerful and important to do, because this is impacting you as well. So when someone gets into diet talk about good foods, bad foods, and all that, shut it down and say, I'm not interested in that kind of friendship. I don't want to be talking about those topics. It's not good for me. It's not good for you. So moving forward, when you bring it up, I'm going to shut it down. And the same thing about when she talks about her body and bathing suits. Don't participate in that. That's part of the work we all need to do, is shut down those conversations, because they don't have any value or real purpose. And it's just us getting stuck in a cycle that our friends are in, where they're kind of emotionally abusing themselves. So pull yourself out of that one. Sliding the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sexy world. We want you to explore with confidence. If you have a DM, go to our Loveline IG page, slide into the DMs there. We can give us call at 833-LOVE-001, 833-LOVE-001, and at wearechannelq.com is where our show is podcasted. You can go back, listen to old episodes, binge them, post them, share them. We'll be back tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Y'all have an awesome night, and as always, thanks for hanging out with me.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.